Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jim Flink. The Central African Republic may not be a country on everyone's radar, but for the past 2.5 years, it has been the scene of a bloody conflict that's left thousands dead and tens of thousands more displaced. In December of 2012, Muslim rebel groups known as the Seleka began taking over towns and cities in the country. That group succeeded in overthrowing the government and taking control of the CAR in the spring of 2013. Although Seleka has officially been forced from the capital city of Bangui, its forces continue to terrorize some parts of the country, leading France and South Africa to send military support to the CAR. In recent weeks, anti-Seleka forces, known as the Anti-Balaka, largely Christian in makeup, have also joined the fray, and allegations have arisen that ethnic cleansing against Muslims is now taking place. Today on Global Journalist, we take a look at the conflict in the Central African Republic. Joining us, Reuters West and Central Africa correspondent Bate Felix, Voice of America senior editor Idris Fall, and Jordan Wiley, an emergency project coordinator for Doctors Without Borders, who was in the CAR earlier this year. And thanks to all of you for joining us today on Global Journalist. Bate, if we could start with you, there certainly have been a number of developments just in the last 24 to 36 hours inside of Chad, also with the EU and the UN. Can you bring us up to date on what's going on there now?
A number of things have happened. I'll start off with the most recent one, Chad. That is a breaking story we had just about an hour or two ago. Chad has decided to pull out its 850 troops it had in the MISCA, in the African Union peacekeeping forces. That's just the breaking news we had a few hours ago. Now, this is very important because Chad has come under a lot of criticism about the action of its troops. Just recently, I think on Saturday, they were accused of riding into Bangui and, you know, attacking civilians. And we didn't have confirmed numbers, but I think there are reports of about, you know, up to 30 civilians killed by the Chadian troops. Now, the Chadians have defended themselves that they were attacked by the Anti-Balaka, but, you know, we still don't have, you know, the exact, you know, the exact events of what happened. That's just the latest of what is happening. Meanwhile, the African Union and the European Union leaders are meeting in Brussels. They were meeting yesterday to try, and Central African Republic was one of the top issues on the agenda. The European Union has finally decided to send more troops to help the peacekeeping efforts, but we don't know, you know, how soon they'll get there to be able to stabilize the situation.
Idris Fall, take us back about a year. François Bozizé is deposed as president of the CAR. A Muslim force replaces him. For a short period of time. Give us a little bit of context about what resulted after the president was deposed.
And that Muslim force named Seleka is formed by several groups, mostly former rebel groups coming from the north. They were also backed by Chad. They brought a guy named Michel Djotodia to power. But, you know, Central African Republic is very poor, and those rebels who took power, they did not have money, they did not have food. The first thing was they began looting, attacking Christian population. And that lasts from March 2013 until December, where a noble force, which is said is backed by the former president, François Bozizé, the Anti-Balaka, began also launched an offensive in Bangui. They tried to take over, but couldn't. So what happened, they hold a meeting in N'Djamena with the pressure of France, asking the Muslim president, Jotodia, to leave power. He left power, they form a transitional government, and it did not work very well. So they get rid of them, even the Prime Minister Nicolas Tanguy, and now they form a new transitional government. But this is only political. On the ground, you have a kind of, I think, 1,600 French soldiers with around 5,000 African soldiers trying to stabilize the country. And you still have the anti-Balaka, which are attacking Muslims in some neighborhood. The anti-Seleka also inside the country that are attacking some Christians. This is where we are now. And yesterday, European Union, as Batige said, is willing to send around 1,000 soldiers. And everybody knows, even with the withdrawal of the Chadian troop from Misca, all these soldiers never been enough to bring back peace in the country. Because if you say 1,500 French soldiers in Bangui with a curfew, every day we keep seeing that there are some people killed, more people killed. Today, 4, another day, 10, the past weekend, 12, and it's still going on. I don't know how the international community going to do. And we heard that the UN going to hold a meeting next week, maybe to decide that they're going to send more troops. And more troops, which country going to provide those troops? We don't know. For right. the time, is where we are.
Jordan Wiley, you have been on the ground as recently as earlier this year, and I'm sure bore witness to much of what was going on. We should note that prior to about a year and a half ago, Muslims and Christians lived side by side by most accounts in relative peace, and that there really wasn't this sectarian violence. And yet, the things that I'm sure that you witnessed earlier this year are about as horrific as it comes, yes?
Yeah, they are. I would say even more recently than a year and a half ago, when communities, both Muslim and Christian, were living fine side by side. I was there also in August and September, and we didn't really have the same level of targeting, we could say, based on a group that we had before. Just to give you a quick a recap, MSF has been in Central African Republic since 1997. We have an interesting understanding of the situation from the different areas where we've been, because there's a lot of areas where we don't have any other actors present just because of the insecurity. So today we have around 240 international staff and over 2,000 national staff working in the country, and mostly, of course, focused in the West. And that enables us to have, you know, visibility in certain areas that don't get a whole lot of coverage. So my zone of responsibility as in December, January, was in the northwest around the region of Boko Ranga, which is, you know, about 8 hours or so from Bangui. And while our teams are actively working in 8 regular projects in the country, there's also 8 emergency projects currently active. And I was part of one of those emergency projects during my time in December, January.
The carnage that's taking place there, Jordan, people are armed with machetes. There are some weapons. Certainly the French forces have tried to disarm as many of both of these camps as possible, and yet that's not possible. And so what you're seeing is sort of vigilante justice being carried out on the streets, retaliation, if you will.
That's exactly right. The weapons that are used, I mean, we're talking about certain areas where we've seen where people still use bows and arrows and spears and, like you said, machetes. They're also able to manufacture their own arms. It's a very basic type of firearm, but usually used in hunting, you know, small game and animals in the forest. But they're able to manufacture those by hand. So thankfully, at least, there's for certain groups that we're talking about there, they have been using weapons of war, which are in some cases much more efficient in killing, but the quantity of arms that are currently present. I was there in 2010, and there I can tell you that the proliferation of arms is quite astounding, actually. And if you think of it this way, the Anti-Balaka formed originally to have a sort of self-defense group to defend themselves and defend their villages, because they're sort of left hanging out there to the winds of whatever other armed group came through, usually much better equipped and much better armed. So they did what they had to do to try to defend their villages. But as you said today, it's sort of morphed into a different type of confrontation.
Bate Felix, since the Anti-Balaka has sort of gained the upper hand once again, we've seen a fairly large-scale genocide. We've seen a massive migration, a great migration of Muslims in particular out of the city of Bangui. Can you explain sort of what's been happening over the last 30, 45 days?
Well, essentially, it seems as if, the Anti-Balaka, they're not, the former speaker was saying, they are not really, they've evolved from this local militia in the villages that, were formed to protect their farms and villages and cattle herds from marauding thieves. They've now have in their ranks, former FACA soldiers, or what they call FACA soldiers. These are former soldiers from the regular army, who, after the Seleka came into Bangui, they had, run away, and most of them, went across the border into Congo, some went into Cameroon, and some went into the bushes. And, there is some suspicion that, they are being financed by, external elements, maybe some pro-police people, to come in and create this, force that has been able to cause this much havoc, and they just want to continue doing that in such a way that the country will be ungovernable and permit, to come back. That is what some people are saying. But, you can see that they are very much organized. As I spoke to quite a good number of them, a good number of Anti-Balaka commanders. Some of them clearly told me that they are former FACA soldiers, who, they've decided to join to create their own factions, because they are not really coordinated. You have different commanders commanding different Anti-Balaka groups, and they are not really organized. They are not coordinated. They are not, they just roam about and control, particular sections of Bangui or sections of, towns or routes in the country. And nobody really keeps checks on them, and there is no central coordination, which makes it very, very difficult to bring them under some kind of control.
You're listening to Global Journalist. I'm Jim Flink. Today we're looking at the conflict in the Central African Republic and the challenges facing that region. Joining us, Bate Felix, Reuters West and Central Africa correspondent, Idris Fall, a senior editor at Voice of America, and Jordan Wiley, an emergency project coordinator for Doctors Without Borders, who was in the CAR earlier this year. Now, we want to remind you that you can listen to this and other full episodes of Global Journalist on our website. That's globaljournalist.org. You can also find links to other stories related to this broadcast, including coverage of the international response to the conflict and further background information on the religious tensions in the Central African Republic. For more Global Journalist content, you can also like us on Facebook, or you can follow us on Twitter at Global Journ. Idris Fall, to the issue of sort of the chaotic situation that's going on right now in the CAR, as a reporter covering that area, it's difficult because many news agencies can't risk having correspondents in such an unstable situation, and so reporters sort of come in and come out, and there is some concern about the consistency of a message, that there needs to be more reporters on the ground so that that can sort of quell some of the instability.
Well, but we have several reporters, but it's very, very dangerous, really, really. I remember when I was in Bangui this past December, several journalists had been attacked. And it's very, very difficult because you have two sides. When you go to a Christian neighborhood sometime, people, if they feel that you are Muslim, you can be in danger. The same, if you go to Kilomet Sank, there they say France is here to support the Christian. They attack some French journalists. So to do the job is very, very complicated. A lot of journalists stay at the hotel, and also there is this curfew who had been on effect. So the only work you can do is from 6 to 6 p.m., and it's already night down there. And I think you have a lot of journalists, but it's very, very difficult. Right now, at this moment, I have two reporters, and one went to Bouar, which is up in the west, I think, 800 or 400 kilometers. I have another reporter who went to Bouar in the southwest, who was describing until now some Muslim are there surrounded by anti-Balakas. But you take risk. You take risk because myself, I had been attacked. The crew of TFO had been attacked down there. I remember Robert King from Vice had been attacked. And I think Antenne 2 also had been attacked, you know. And but we have to go there to do the job. If we are not there, nobody will know what's going on inside Bangui or outside Bangui. And but I think that for the U.S. Here, I think it's not a much of an interest for CNN or whoever. Most of them, they don't come. You have a lot of French press, or you have Reuters, AP, and AFP, mostly, if not international media like BBC, Le Monde in France, and the French radios, because France is involved in the conflict. But here in the U.S., I think I did not see any reporter from the Washington Post, or even I saw one guy from the New York Times, and they arrived there once Obama administration decided to send, what's the name of the lady at the UN, the U.S. representative, at the Samantha Power, but they come only for one day. Right. And I think it looks like it's not for an interest for the U.S. viewers or the U.S. listeners. Sometimes NPR can carry a story because it comes from a BBC correspondent who was there, but for the U.S. here, I don't see so much interest about what's going on in Sierra. And everybody know, and UN call it a pre-genocide situation.
Right.
If you remember what happened in Rwanda,
sure,
about 20 years ago, everybody know that something were being prepared. And so we don't know what's going to happen next. We really, really don't know.
And Bate Felix, the French journalists that are there are being treated almost suspiciously at this moment. Maybe you can provide a little context to that.
Yeah, well, from the onset, you could see that. I mean, if you look back at reports that were put out, immediately the French decided to send troops. The French were almost welcome. They were very much welcome. There were people dancing out in the streets and welcoming them, that they were going to come save them from the Seleka. That was just, you know, the beginning. Things got a little bit heady when, you know, the two French soldiers were killed just, you know, immediately after they came in, and the French sort of like pulled back somewhat from the streets, and the disarmament campaign that they started, they sort of like scaled back on it a little bit. And you could see that the mood was changing because the Muslim neighborhood, people were accusing them of, you know, deliberately disarming the Selekas and Muslims and leaving them to the mercy of, you know, the anti-Balaka and the Christians. And you could see that the mood was gradually changing when, you know, the French decided, okay, we're going to do this, you know, equally and, you know, try and disarm the anti-Balaka and at the same time, you know, disarm the Selekas. for any reporter, I met some French journalists in December when I was there. For them, you know, they could sense that things were changing, you know, almost immediately on the ground. As Idris was saying, you go to a Seleka neighborhood, you'll be in trouble. You know, I saw some journalists who were, you know, stoned and, you know, they were attacked by mobs and they had to, you know, abandon any intention of filming and, you know, had to hurriedly get out of there. And since then, it has been the same. It's been very, very difficult to operate, you know, on your own on the ground, especially for a French crew to go, say, to an anti-Balaka area. It takes a lot of negotiations with the commanders, and it takes a lot of persuasion to let them, you know, to let them allow you to come in, talk to them, and, you know, leave without, you know, getting into any kind of harm.
Jordan Wiley, just also contextually, this is a very, very poor country, the Central African Republic. By one account, ranked in terms of GDP, 224th out of 229 in the country. There's only one national university, and it has been shuttered for about a year now. And so this is a situation, add to the chaos, the lack of education, the poverty, the sheer poverty that's going on, and you get a better sense of the chaos. And the way it's been described, literally, you can't cross the street because in one area you might be in an anti-Balaka area, and if you cross the street, then you're in a Seleka region. Is that what you experienced as well?
Well, discussing about the general situation, going back to what you were saying, if you think of it this way, it's been a sort of a slow burning crisis, almost a forgotten crisis for many years. It's not that just this sort of situation sort of happened overnight. It's been sort of coming for a little while now, unfortunately. as far as the very specific zonal territory, we do have teams inside Bangui that can sort of describe the situation where you have these enclaves of people, sometimes Muslim, usually Muslim enclaves of where people are sort of, there's borders. There's basically lines of area where once you go in that zone, you're under a different, you know, sort of responsibility, if you think of it that way. But that's in Bangui. In the country, in the countryside where we were, there's a lot different. It's a lot more fluid. There's not such clear dividing lines. It can be village by village. It can be region by region. And in that situation, it's much more difficult to say who is the responsible person for this zone. So one of our, you know, big priorities is being able to negotiate with whoever's in the zone to ensure that we have, you know, free access to give medical care to whoever, be it Muslim or Christian. But it's an important part of our role in any area to be able to maintain a level of access to the patients that need to be seen. We've seen over 4,000 victims of violence since December 5th. And that number is, of course, increasing every day.
And as a Westerner, is it frustrating that particularly U.S. media isn't shedding a greater light on what's going on there?
You know, I've thought about that for a little while, and it's difficult. I've often asked the question, why? Like Idris and Mbate were alluding to, we don't have a whole lot of American U.S. media there. Number one is French. It's a French-speaking country, which sometimes can play out. But sometimes, more importantly, a very small population in relation to its neighbors. So you have 4.5 million people in the CAR. You have Sudan just to the north, Chad just to the north, Congo just to the south. It's sort of situated in this geographically, interesting location. So there's several reasons for that. Whether or not it frustrates me or not, I don't know, but I'd at least like to speak in English part of these type of programs so that the American and the English-speaking media can sort of have more avenues or more options to speak about these type of conflicts,
sure.
Sort of forgotten crisis, if you will.
Right, Idris Fall, do you believe that the developments in the last 24 to 36 hours are going to make some sort of significant improvement?
Go
ahead, Idris.
Sorry.
I think that Chad did maybe a good move, but I don't think it will stabilize the situation because, you know, Chad had been involved inside the politics of CAR for years. I used to say it is their background. They go there to play. They brought Bozizé against the over-president, okay? Even the personal guard of Bozizé, they were charging. So,
fomenting the unrest, if it were.
So now they brought back Michel Djotodia, and at the moment they pushed him out. And now the situation is here. They pull out because they had been accused. Yeah, as Bate was just saying last Saturday, they were accused of killing 30 civilians, and it may help a little bit. But if you pull out Chad, who's going to fill in? You have Burundian soldiers. They are parked mostly at the entrance of Kilometre 5, where some Muslims are still there. You have soldiers from DRC. You have soldiers from the Over Congo Brazzaville and France. European Union say they're going to send more soldiers. I doubt. Maybe soldiers from Sweden. It's very cold in Sweden, and I am waiting to see them in Bangui, which is very warm and without electricity sometime. So I really don't know.
Right.
Because the country had been having rebellions and rebellions. Even what is called the FACA, the former official soldiers, most of them were former rebels at the time when Bozizé himself was a rebel against Patassé. Even under Patassé, we know that even the army at the time was in crisis because the soldiers at the time went out looting everywhere. They call it mutinies. They send a former guy from Mali who would become president, Amadou Toumani Touré, to go there. They sign agreement, organize election. And as Jordan was saying, the country is poor. Very, very, very poor.
Right.
I think when I left in January, the salaries of the federal workers, as I can say, the working for the government, they have not been paid for at least 5 months.
Right.
The road from Cameroon, which brings supplies, was cut off because of insecurity. And I don't know. I really, really don't know how this will end. I really don't know.
And Bate Felix, with about 30 seconds to go here, what do you expect to happen next?
Well, no one can. No, that's the thing with Central African Republic. You cannot really predict what is going to happen next. We fear that, you know, the worst may come and the chaos will continue. Because at the moment, we don't see, you know, how this could be resolved, especially with Chad pulling out. What happens in the north when Chad pulls out?
Right. And that's all for this edition of Global Journalists, produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Joining us on the program today were Bate Felix, Reuters West and Central Africa correspondent, Idris Ball, a senior editor at Voice of America, and Jordan Wiley, an emergency project coordinator for Doctors Without Borders, who was in the Central African Republic earlier this year. Our executive producer is Casey Morrell. Our lead producer, Joanne Coca. Travis McMillan from RJI is our technical director, and Austin Federa from KBIA is our audio engineer. Join us again next time for another edition of Global Journalist. I'm Jim Flink.